Well, it was a nice break here in the Maldives. We were here for a good solid 12 hours, and then packing up today. We've determined it's safe and good to get in and out of Kinshasa today. So we're going to proceed over to Mombasa, turn around and in about an hour, and head over to Kinshasa. We'll get in around 6 p.m.
Nobody gets into flying airplanes with the intention of becoming a ferry pilot. I didn't even know such a thing existed until years into my career. It sounds like a dream job to most people, traveling the world, flying all different types of aircraft. No 2 days ever the same.
Got my exercise, got my steps in for the day.
You gonna survive the high elevation stair climbing?
Oh yeah, no wonder I can't breathe.
I don't know how high Cali is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
We will soon.
Mountains everywhere.
Yeah.
Seems like everything is 5,000 to 10,000 feet in Colombia.
But there are definitely trade-offs, and the road to fruition took many years before Bob and I turned what started as a hobby for a couple of airline pilots into a real company with the infrastructure of an airline and the revenue to make it into a bona fide career. But ferry flying is more than just doing an airline pilot's job while wearing street clothes. Moving a heavy jet across the planet requires an orchestra of support. Airlines have dozens of people carrying out tasks in the background that go unnoticed by not only the flying public, but also the crew themselves. We, on the other hand, must make it happen with little more than a quartet. And as the crew, we also need to conduct the symphony while battling jet lag on the move.
There's always been a need to move airplanes. I mean, going back to World War II, I mean, ferry pilots, you know, played a critical role. And most ferry pilots during World War II were women, you know, in non-combatant roles that were flying B-25s and B-17s and DC-3s, you know, over the ocean. So this is not a new concept by any stretch. And it's always existed on the periphery and you don't hear about it. I mean, it's not a mainstream part of this industry.
So going back to the very beginnings of starting this business, I was a guy that quit the airlines. I mean, literally said, walked away from a job in the airlines and said, I will never go back and do this ever again. I had started this ferry business, but I had very few clients, not enough to make a living for sure. So I was doing everything that I could. I was cold calling anybody that owned an airplane.
Going on 24 hours late.
Yeah, dying.
Been flying since yesterday morning from Moran, Arizona to Des Moines, to Goose Bay, Keflavik, and now we're on the last leg to Stockholm. Can't wait to get to a hotel. Have a few drinks and go to sleep.
And through that, I found out that there was this billionaire down in Texas that was buying the entire fleet of U.S. Air aircraft. And one of their bankruptcies had gone bankrupt and they had grounded all of their 737-200s and all of their MD-80s. There was, I think it was a fleet of 220 airplanes. So I'd heard about this fleet of airplanes that was going to need to be moved. It's going to need to be moved around the U.S. and they were all going to go to, you know, someplace over in Europe and then down into Africa. Years worth of work. I was like, I absolutely have to get this business. So I started calling the owners of this company, trying to get a hold of them. And I finally, like after months of doing that, cold calling and being pushy, I finally got to the head guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was the late 90s when Bob first ventured into ferrying planes, and by the time I started contracting for him in 05, he'd already begun making a name for himself within the leasing industry. Initially, I was only rated on the DC-9 and MD-80, and that worked well back then, as the Mad Dog was only second to the 737 as the most common ferry mission. I'd go pick up a delivery to Nigeria or Russia while on days off from flying domestic Des Moines and Fargo turns with the airline.
About 50 knots of wind and rain, just about 5 degrees centigrade, so not freezing, which is a good thing. Just a little sporty takeoff and landing and a little uncomfortable walking around.
Yeah, I don't need a Red Bull yet. I will need a Red Bull soon. We've been awake for, I don't know, a couple days.
All right, man. Here goes. Ready?
I don't know how we're gonna taxi the airplane here.
It's quite cold, really.
After about a year, I decided to check out on the 737 and make myself more useful to Bob. That was the first time in my career I was actively flying more than one type on a regular basis. I don't remember giving it even a second thought. My friend group was pretty much all ferry pilots, and it was just what we did.
And we expect to be airborne out of Shanghai around 2 o'clock in the morning.
The adventure, the challenge, the variety, even the chaos kept pulling me in deeper. My entire life, all I'd wanted was to be an airline pilot, but putting on the uniform every day, flying gamblers to Vegas and families to Disney World couldn't compete for my attention anymore. On June 30th, 2014, at age 37, I mailed my crew badge back to Vegas and ironically placed the biggest bet of my entire life on myself. The best example of improv on the fly in recent memory is a flight that Bob and I operated out of Edmonton, bound for the city of Tbilisi in the country of Georgia. The airplane was a 737-300 that had just retired from Canadian North and was just sold to a startup airline in Georgia. There were four of them in total, and Bob and I would crew the first one with Pat Roa, one of our management pilots from our Asia office. The plan was to ferry the short-range jet across the Atlantic with fuel stops in Iqaluit, Keflavik, and Malta. And because Bob and I each had to go right into other separate projects later in the week, we brought Pat to heavy crew the mission in order to avoid overnight rest and keep things moving. The 737 is the longest-lived and arguably most successful aircraft type ever built. The early JT8-powered 100s and 200s first delivered in 1968, and over 1,800 were produced. The second generation of 737s are referred to as the classics, and the 300, the type we were about to fly, was introduced in 1984. Boeing built over 1,900 classics between 84 and 2000, and this one was one of the last, delivering to British Airways in 1998. After the classic came the NG, which rolled out in 1993 and ran until 2019, yielding a total of 7,124 units. The 300 became the 700, the 400 the 800, and then the longbody 900 was the final next gen before the NG replacement, which is now in production, called the 737 MAX. Going back 20 years, Bob and I have moved hundreds, if not thousands, of them. Normally, the mission is to replace the older generation planes with the next. Nowadays, it's the MAX replacing the NG most of the time, so climbing back into a classic was going to be a throwback to yesteryear.
So when was the last time you flew a 737 Classic, Bob?
I don't remember.
Well, what's different about the 737 Classic than the NGs?
Everything. Well, at least everything that you can see up here. It looks like a classic airplane. It's kind of an intermix of that. I mean, you do have the EFIS. So,
this is like early gen EFIS, like not like...
This is the first stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when this stuff came out and it seemed futuristic.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff was the greatest stuff ever. I mean, having a moving map that was just like, oh my God. I mean, this was high tech stuff.
Like, I haven't seen one like in this state of repair in a very long time.
Yeah, this place seemed to take very good care of their airplanes. You know, and it's been flying up until recently, so it should be a very good airplane.
Totally, man. Well, what's on tap for today?
Well, when we get the logbook, all that stuff signed off, then we're gonna head out of here to Iqaluit. Iqaluit's, I don't know if it's in the Arctic Circle, but it or just like right on it, but yeah. It's very far north.
We moved a lot of classics 10 years ago when they were getting converted to freighters, but since then, they're pretty rare. And to be honest, I didn't even know that there were still passenger classics at work in North America. This bird also had a very uncommon feature, a set of retractable boarding stairs that could be electrically extended from the cabin, an option that adds weight and provides little benefit for major airlines, but works well for airlines that charter into small airports, and of course for ferry crews like us who'd otherwise have to spend $1,500 on a stair truck for an hour's worth of use during our fuel stops. Well rested and ready to roll, we buttoned up the plane in Edmonton and taxied out, and got all the way to the runway threshold, ready for takeoff when Bob noticed a problem just in the nick of time.
Sounds good. You ready, Bob?
I'm ready.
You recording? Edmonton, good afternoon. Nomadic 172, runway 20, ready for departure.
Nomadic 172, tower departure is 133. That's 465
in the air,
the wind is 1011.
Clear for takeoff runway 20, Nomadic 172.
Hey, stop the recording for a second.
Contrary to what our client listed on our intake forms, the airplane's main VHF radios, the ones we use to talk to ATC, were not 8.33 compliant. In short, European airspace is so densely packed that ATC opened up additional frequencies between the 25 kHz standard spacing, enabling three times as many available frequencies required to handle all of the radio traffic in Europe. This jet hadn't operated in Europe since before the mandate, and although the installed radios could be modified to 8.33, it would require about 2 weeks to get the modification signed off by Transport Canada. And for the airlines, time is money. 2 weeks? A lot of money. We went back to the ramp and immediately jumped into action. We presented the option of avoiding Europe completely by flying a westbound route across the Pacific. The change would add a lot of distance to fly, but we'd be able to get the airplane delivered in 3 days versus 14. So after weighing the costs, our client approved the reroute. Within a few hours, our planning team got everything in place and we'd now fly west. First stopping in Vancouver, then Oahu, Majuro, Guam, and the Philippines. As a crew of three, we could get that far without overnight rest, and dispatch would have the time needed to file for the overflight permissions for the second half from the Philippines to Dhaka, Bangladesh, Karachi, Pakistan, and then Tbilisi, Georgia. Since Bob and I only had 3 days to play with, we'd bail off the trip in the Philippines, and Wes would fly up from Bangkok to partner up with Pat for the second half.
Going off of runway 20.
Yep.
And Hampo 2 departure, straight up.
Everything came together really fast, about 6 hours from the time we confirmed the change.
And you got the clearance and the good squawk in the box?
Yep.
It's all good. All right, I got a...
On the taxi out, I realized I needed to get our catering orders in. You know, the most important thing.
I'm going to get two breakfast burritos.
We're at Vancouver.
Two pad thais. No, Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
There's no sandwiches. Clear right. Two salads. That should work. You want any Guam catering or should I get McDonald's?
No.
Yeah. Papa John's is good there.
Oh, yeah.
Papa John's?
Yeah, that sounds good. What time will we be getting in there? Might be
evening, like 8 p.m.
Yeah, it might still be open.
You ready?
Yeah.
Automatic 172 ready, runway
802. Automatic 172, tower departure frequency is 133.165
near 310 with 23 degrees. Our checking is 50 miles on the way. Okay, clear for takeoff, runway 02, departure 3365, automatic 172.
Set takeoff thrust.
Thrust set.
Automatic 172 Friday flight level 255-282.
Automatic 172, just having a great flight level 360.
Left flight level 360, automatic, with cycle to pavement up to 36 set.
It's like Vancouver was closer to Edmonton than this. I haven't been to Vancouver in ages, man. We used to do our Dash 8 training here at Air Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I haven't been up here in a long time.
I like it up here.
Probably since, like, the Great American days.
Yeah.
What's up?
Started. Vancouver was only stop one. We still had to island hop across the Pacific today, and the sun wouldn't set for another 11 hours.